The treatment then for autoimmune disease involves two components: what to do during flare-up and what to do during the time it's quiet. It's the same thing goes for cancer, right? Part of the theme at this conference is about cancer. And while you're going to hear a lot about oils that are good for cancer, keep in mind that cancer is a process, right? Treating cancer does not necessarily treat the process. It's like if you had a tumor removed and you thought that that tumor represented the cancer, that's false. The tumor is just a manifestation of a process. Removing a tumor doesn't mean you got rid of cancer. The cancer is still as a process taking place in the body. What you need to do is get rid of the process. And that process is usually related to heat. Also, it's very important to understand that, right, when you look at this idea of autoimmune condition, what we're saying is that if the body is very weak and you give them, even though we think of as natural substances, but very powerful substances, if you give someone who is very weak, right, some type of oil that destroys tumors, you inadvertently, right, because eventually, right, as the tumor is destroyed, you have to get rid of it. Right? You have to get rid of the waste product of it. And if the body is very weak, sometimes, right, even though you might have reduced the tumor load or you might have reduced the size of the tumor, getting rid of that tumor load, if your body's detoxification process is very weak, will cause auto-intoxication, and you die from the treatment. A lot of times people die from chemotherapy, not because the chemotherapy is not destroying the tumor, it is, but the chemotherapy itself is so toxic that the body doesn't know how to get rid of that, and they die from that auto-intoxication. So it's very important to recognize that when someone is very weak, maybe what we need to do, rather than try to get rid of the cancer, is help to strengthen them first and then deal with the cancer at some later point in time, right? In other words, it's sometimes even been argued in Western medicine, sometimes the best treatment of cancer is rather the management of cancer, right? That is, do not try to radically try to treat the tumor, just manage it so the tumor basically is not growing very quickly, and so the person still is able to have a relatively good quality of life. So we need to be very careful when we talk about treating cancer. Are we trying to treat cancer, but in terms of actually getting rid of it? Then the person's immune system has to be strong. If the person's immune system is weak, we might want to consider the idea that what we want to do is manage the condition and just really try to strengthen the immune system and then treat the cancer at some later point in time. All right, and the same thing goes with autoimmune disease. During the time of flare-up, we want to help to reduce the flare-up, reduce the intensity of it. It's between the flare-ups that we want to treat the actual condition. Right? So in terms of treatment strategies, the first consideration is during the flare-up, we want to clear heat. So the common essential oils are the ones that we already discussed earlier, and I try to put a greater emphasis on the profile of those oils that clear us heat in terms of the biography or the history that the person comes to the clinic with. The second important one, especially for autoimmune disease, is we want oils that are very heavy. Right? Heavy means, remember, it means that they're very mysterious. They take a while for the body to assimilate. They take a while for its essence to really be fully revealed because it diffuses very slowly. So its qualities, its revelation, right, takes time to understand. That's what sometimes we are like as human beings, is that we are very complicated. And as a result, what we think of as the simple solution may not be. It may simply be a masquerade for something that's very deep inside of us. So we may want to use some very primordial oils, base note oils, things like frankincense, right, things like spikenard, and as we mentioned earlier, cedarwood. If we think of frankincense as an essential oil, definitely clears heat, but more importantly, it opens up the diaphragm. It allows us to kind of like reflect on our lives. That's why it's a very meditative, right? It's a very religious oil. right? Because by opening the diaphragm, it enhances our breathing capacity. Enhancing our breathing capacity is enhancing our ability to breathe into ourselves, to recognize, to understand the basis of what it is that is troubling me. And frankincense in Chinese herbal medicine is highly regarded as an oil that treats chronic wounds that do not want to heal. And that's sometimes what our condition is like. It's like I've been wounded, and I constantly are pulling off the scab on the wound and making myself always be the victim, making myself always be the martyr. And if I want to stay victimized throughout my life, I need something to tell me why my life is a misery. And one of those miseries could be an autoimmune disease, this constant need to hurt myself, this constant need to tell myself that I am a failure and I am a victim. Chronic non-healing wounds. And that's what some of us are like. We want to stay victimized. We don't want the trauma to end. We don't want the melodrama to end. Right? And as a result, that might be the oil that we need to unravel for the person. And again, a lot of people will be initially very resistant, right? Because you're resistant to changing yourself. And that's why the base notes oils helps to break down that resistance. Again, cedarwood, right, would be the other option, right? Or spikenard, right, would be another one. Spikenard, again, right, is someone who is very impatient with healing. We get some of those kind of patients, right? They want to come in and says, well, I've done all these things. What is aromatherapy going to do for me, right? And so there's a certain expectation, right? I did the oils for a day. How come the tumor's not shrinking? How come the pain is not getting smaller? And while you definitely, I think, have heard some amazing results from clinicians who have presented here how tumors have shrank in 4 days or what have you, we sometimes have people that even that is not amazing enough, right? So that's where the spikenard comes in. That's just kind of like a person who needs to first give it of their own anxiety, their own impatience, because it's that impatience that is constantly creating in a way, right, almost like looking for something to become a resistance toward, right? Why is this not? Why? And always asking why, right? So that would be a basis of where we might consider spikenard as a very important oil for that. And to clear heat for autoimmune diseases, one of the things we need to do is we need to apply liniments. So here, the recommendation is no longer using the oils in a oil base, but rather using the oils in an alcohol base. Alcohol, remember, right, stimulates the spirits. Spirits for the spirits, right? Alcohol affects the blood. Think of when you just drink some alcohol, how ruddy of a complexion you get, right? It has a strong impact on the blood, how it can intoxicate your mind and cause you to go into a state of drunkenness. So it affects your shen, your spirit. So alcohol, right, is used not only to affect, right, the blood, but it's affecting that person's consciousness, right? During the flare-up, there's a sense of hopelessness. There's a sense that this condition will never go away. And the liniment reduces the pain, right? They're obviously analgesic, but more importantly, it reduces the suffering, right? And it reduces the person who refuses to honor their pain and recognize that this pain is part of the process of healing rather than the process of something that's flaring up. So among the oils that I've listed here that can be useful in these liniments include ginger, lychee, myrtle, right, parsley, and even tarragon. So very important to help invigorate the blood, to help get things to move, to get their mind not to be fixated on their disease, in particular on the outcome. Understand the process rather than the outcome, right? We as a culture tends to be more about the outcome, right? In 3 days, this tumor will get smaller, right? That's the outcome, right? Well, what's happening between day one and day three? That's the process, right? Sometimes it's the process that we want to understand, because remember, The tumor shrinking doesn't mean the tumor will not grow back later on. The process is what you want to understand, okay? So, and then the second thing is we talked about already this idea of Wei Qi, this Qi that deals with the external terrain. And the common essential oils that helps to move Wei Qi are the top node oils. Those include things, again, like clove, right? Again, oils that have the eugenol, right? Things like rosemary, right? Verbena would be the chemotype that I would recommend for making these types of liniments to help promote, right, circulation to the surface, to help vent, to help draw out the latency so that you can, well, reduce the frequency of flare-ups, but more importantly, the intensity when these flare-ups do occur. That's the importance of these top note oils. Bay laurel, again, another eugenol, right? Or you may even use cinnamon leaf, right, which is not listed there. But right, and then, of course, the person who's very agitated, right, who's very who's under so much pain that they can't go to sleep, valerian, right, or lemon verbena, right? These could be our possible oils to help calm them during this healing crisis. Lemongrass would be another possibility with the aldehydes, right? So again, it has a very warming effect to help transform stagnation. And then, as we said, during flare-up, we want to promote detoxification. We want to get things to begin to move. And with detoxification, what we're talking about is first, right, the importance of hydration. Second is the importance of getting the, right, ring muscles, right, the tubular muscles, the muscles from the area of the mouth, down the throat, esophagus, all the way into the rectum, into the anus, right? So the whole entire alimentary canal needs to be stimulated during flare-up so the body is able to reduce toxic overload. And including in these digestive oils would be cardamom, right? You have also lychee, right? Celery seed, a very important oil to get rid of fire toxins, especially useful for not only working in the liver, but also working on the kidneys. Patchouli could be another, right, option. Right, patchouli would be especially for someone who is really in a state of hopelessness. Right? Patchouli in Chinese herbal medicine is used quite extensively, especially for what we would call parasitic infestations. And then eucalyptus, right, would be any of the eucalyptus can be very useful for helping to promote detoxification during that time. And then as we look at this aspect that relates to latency, that is when the condition is basically quiet, right? So someone who, let's say, is suffering from rheumatoid arthritis, or someone who it can even be suffering from chronic hepatitis. It doesn't even have to be, right, autoimmune diseases per se, but someone whose condition is chronic and asymptomatic, right? But one of the unique things about autoimmune disease is we know that they generally have episodes where the person becomes somewhat symptomatic, and then it goes into a state of remission, into a state of being somewhat latent. But during the time of latency, this is the time that we want to continue to get rid of the inflammation that is arousing the body's, right, immune system, or in Western medicine, the idea is the immune system that's causing the inflammation. So we want to reduce this inflammation. Granted, it's coming from either the immune system or it's coming from, right, what I would suggest is the body's immune system continuing to react to something that is latent, right, that might be undetected because it has hiding places that sometimes you cannot detect. Right? Things doesn't always have to hide in the blood, and things doesn't always have to hide in, let's say, if you do hair analysis or do urine analysis. Sometimes pathogenic factors hide in tissues. As we know, sometimes in Western medicine, they really don't know what's going on unless they do a biopsy. Right? So, you know, you can have relatively healthy liver enzymes, you can have relatively, right, healthy blood, but sometimes they still don't know the extent of your chronic hepatitis C unless they do a biopsy of your liver, right? So to them, right, a lot of times it's in the tissues and they won't be able to detect it purely by doing an examination of the blood, or in some cases just doing sonograms or an MRI or a CAT scan or something of that sort. So the idea here is that during latency, we still want to imagine, right, that there, because you still have a condition, or the individual still believes that he or she has a condition, you have to work with the toxic overload that comes from this inflammatory, right, process. So here we have the important oils that gets rid of fire toxins. Helichrysum, right, one of my favorite oils actually for dealing with cancer. Right. So that would be one example, right, of an oil that helps to clear heat and its toxicity. Palmarosa would be another one. Right. Mimosa is another one. Right. And then you have violet and celery seed again. So again, we might even consider histories. Helichrysum, again, would be quite implicated for someone who has chronic infections. Right. You have a history of having chronic infections. As a child, you might have been sickly. You had had bronchitis quite a bit. You maybe even had had pneumonia at one time, right? And maybe for women, a lot of times, right, rather than having a lot of upper respiratory, a lot of times with women, they tend to have a lot of infections that's in the lower region. So as a woman, right, a person might have had a lot of yeast infections, urinary tract infections. They might have a history of dysmenorrhea, per se. So again, a sign that there is something that's inflammatory, causing a lot of cramping, a lot of pain, right? And as a result, that acid built up, causing maybe even some scarring, some fire toxins in terms of its manifestation. So here, helichrysum is very useful in dealing with that. Helichrysum also expels worms. So again, useful for dealing with parasitic infestation. And we know that it has chemicals, right, in it that helps it to be an anticoagulant, preventing blood from becoming too sticky. The other one, as I mentioned, is Palmarosa. Palmarosa, again, is useful for a lot of skin conditions, right, dermatological conditions, right, as well as oak moss would be very useful for that, right, per se. Mimosa, which is very high in aldehydes, and aldehydes generally are very powerful for moving stagnation. Again, it's an absolute, right? And it's useful for what we call contamination in the blood. So blood that shows up as having elevated white blood cells, as having, again, usually elevated platelets, right? Sign that the body is hemorrhaging, sign that the body, right, is having to constantly create wound healing, right? So, you know, we need to build more platelets to clot the blood. That means there must be a lot of wounds building up in the body. So we might use something like mimosa. Violet, which is another absolute, right, is also useful for that. And violet is useful for what we call fire toxins that manifest especially in the mucous membranes, right? So things that we would associate with carcinomas, mucous membrane tumors, cancer, right? Carcinoma type, rather than sarcomas and things of that sort. And then celery seed, right, would be the other very powerful fire toxin herb. Now, again, celery seed is somewhat estrogenic, so you might need to be somewhat careful if you're dealing with cancer, right, that has estrogenic receptivity. But generally, when we think of celery seed, we think of it especially useful for, right, in terms of autoimmune disease, rheumatoid arthritis, joint conditions, bone conditions, right, skeletal conditions. We might even think of it for osteoarthritis, per se, celery seed. And again, the importance of using liniments during flare-ups when you have autoimmune conditions. The last two strategies is that we strengthen the immune system. So we don't try to weaken the immune system as we do in Western medicine with our steroidal drugs for autoimmune disease. The idea is that you have a displaced immune system. Weakening the immune system will, as you all know, will weaken your body's susceptivity, right, to other pathogenic factors. And as a result, even though you might be treating the autoimmune condition, you can inadvertently cause the person to develop, right, some type of bacterial or viral infection, right, because you've been suppressing the immune system. So what we want to do is strengthen the Wei Qi, the immune system, but we want to help to direct it, right, so that it goes into the areas of latency to fight off the disease. And in my experience, usually the ones that have the needle oils are very good for strengthening the immune system, directing it inward. So pine, fir, spruce, cedar, right? All of these needle oils are very, very important for helping the body to strengthen the Wei Qi. Right? You could think of it as strengthening the adrenal glands. Right? Very often we think of these needle oils as very powerful for restoring the adrenal function. Well, the adrenals, remember, represent our body's unconscious level, right, by which it deals with fear or something that it believes will harm the body. Right? So if we have adrenaline that's constantly being secreted, right, in the form of cortisol, it means we're in a constant hypervigilant state. We're constantly wanting to fight off something. And that means autoimmunity. So part of our goal is to calm that hypervigilant state, return it back, right, to what we think of as the foundation. And that is what we Chinese medicine refer to as the kidneys, right? The kidneys, because the kidneys deals with the fluid system that helps to flush out the toxins that's in the blood as well as the toxins that's in the lymphatic system. And the last consideration is to nourish the yin, right? Build back the tissue damage, right, that the inflammation has caused. More importantly, by nourishing yin, you help to sedate, you help to suppress, you help to keep the inflammatory process in check. That's kind of like people using omega oils and things of that sort. So this is why we use heavy oils. Oils like coconut oil, oils like sesame oil, right, and these oils, right, are now used with essential oils to help anchor the inflammatory process. So oils like oak moss, right, would be useful for nourishing yin. Right, oils like jasmine, absolute. Right, oils like rose and geranium. So again, these are just examples. Do not think of these as the only oils. There are definitely a lot of oils that's out there, and quite sure a number of the speakers will present their own oils that has become their popular oils. So, but more importantly, I think the focus here is the strategy. That is to say that if we are working as a clinician and we're dealing with autoimmune diseases, we need to consider how to treat someone during the time of the flare-up, and then also how to treat them during the time that they're asymptomatic, so that you should be able to reverse the condition by, from a theoretical point of view, provided that the individual is willing for that intervention to take place. Right? There's a false belief that everyone wants to heal, but they may not necessarily want to be healed in the manner that you as a clinician think healing is. So we need to sometimes honor that as well. And that's why you always treat the individual and never just the condition that you're working with. So while, you know, the theme has been on, that I, at least that I've talked about, on degenerative diseases, on autoimmune diseases, and to some degree even on cancer, keep in mind that these conditions are just reflective of a process, and that what we want to do, or at least what I would recommend that you want to consider doing, is understand the strategy by which you work with the individual. And some people, for example, do not like hydration. They don't like the sense that they feel they have within themselves the yin, the medium, to get rid of something. So hydration for some people is hard. Some people don't want to feel calm about their lives, right? They want to have the animation. They want to have something to keep their mind busy and active. So they bring on their stress, right? They reduce one stress factor just so that they can accept another stress factor. And so they might be very resistant to you clearing heat, right, or calming their shen, as we call it. So we need to recognize that that resistance may be what we need to work on first before we actually work on the condition. So that's the basis of the strategies that I want to share with all of you today. Are there any questions before we conclude our discussion for this evening? Yes. In general, when we think of making a blend, my recommendations for clinicians is usually a 4 to 6% dilution. That is like anywhere from 40 to 60 drops of an essential oil blend with a carrier, be it, you know, a carrier for greater absorption into the body, like sweet almond oil, or be it for promoting latency, as in the case of coconut oil, or even in terms of using it with an alcohol base. So with internal intake, what I generally recommend is actually depending on what you're trying to build. And in our context, a lot of times we talk about internal intake for the oils that promotes yin or that promotes hydration. So usually that's going to be done for internal intake in a honey base. So you might be making a blend where we have the oils and honey, and then they'll take a quarter of a tablespoon of honey, mix that with water and drink that down. Sometimes if we want to drive it into the liver, then we might have that like with some type of cod liver oil or with olive oil, so that stimulates the liver and gallbladder right away. And that would be especially important if we see metastatic cancer. The metastatic cancer, you want to have the involvement of gallbladder. The gallbladder has been removed and the involvement of the liver in helping to direct that blend, that oil blend, do the oil absorption into the nerve, right? And again, nerves essentially are regulated very often by the so-called omega oils, the so-called fish oils. So that's why cod liver oil, and that would then also bring it into the brain. So if you have metastatic cancer or conditions that involves the brain, very important to use an oil base for internal intake of the oils in that context. But usually 4 to 6% dilution is my recommendation. Yes?
Hold on 1 second. I'm coming with the microphone.
We want to bring microphones over to people doing the questions. So if you just hold on to the questions till the lovely Julian gets to you.
I was trying to get a contact or website or email address. Do you have one?
You can always get in touch with me through the Swedish Institute in New York City. Okay. There's one in the back.
Hi. One question is, I find that people with chronic illness, let's say fibromyalgia, when they have relapses, often the liver gets sluggish. And I was wondering, what is the most powerful way that you know of that people could use the oils to stimulate their liver, not just when I do it and I see them, but in terms of a home treatment? And then the second question is, in treating lots of chronic illness, I find most people are quite ambivalent about whether they deserve to really get better. And I was wondering if you could comment on that, because I find that if you don't address that, somehow people mess up the treatment, don't come back, a whole bunch of things.
Right. In terms of the first question about chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia, a lot of times when we think of anything that works on helping to strengthen the fascia in terms of strengthening what we would call the sinews, in terms of Chinese medicine, the sinews are controlled heavily by the liver. Right? The liver is said to manifest through the sinews. And so as a result, the relapse usually comes if the person has some degree of anemia, that is, they have some degree of blood deficiency. So if you're treating fibromyalgia and they have an underlying blood deficiency, that's when the liver gets very congested, because as you're trying to strengthen back the sinews, or as you're trying to get rid of what we might think of as causing it, be it Epstein-Barr virus or what have you, the liver becomes very stagnated. So very often, castor oil packs, you know, using something like carrot seed would be very useful, using things that stimulates overall the liver. And again, German chamomile would be useful for that. Greenland moss would be useful for that. Lavender could be useful for that. Again, you know, all I'm doing is just going, describing oils that have an effect on the liver. We obviously need to look at what may potentially cause that liver blood to be deficient. Does this person lack the ability to see themselves as being able to overcome their illness? That could be seen as a liver statement. Does this person hold a lot of rage and anger, that be given that they have fibromyalgia, that people around them have not been very empathetic with them? That might be a good candidate for Roman chamomile. So we need to look at the profile by which the liver is stagnating, rather than simply, here's a liver stagnation, these oils are good for liver stagnation. And the second, I think for most of us, when we enter the healing process, we enter it looking for a practitioner that not only is going to demonstrate compassion to our suffering, but someone that in some ways helps to lighten up our hearts. I think that's the key feature. I think when clients sometimes encounter a practitioner that dictates to them what the treatment needs to be, and granted there are people that do need that type of practitioner, but the ones who feel that they don't deserve to heal, that there is something that's so wounded about them, these are the people that we obviously need to show them that they need to heal not only for themselves, but they need to heal in the process of discovering, kind of like giving them back purpose is what the healing is. And I think the first way of giving people back purpose is to give them love. And I mean love in a way that we first accept them for what they are. And the fact that they don't want to heal, we will say, well, then I don't want to heal along with you. We have to be companions in the process of healing. We have to be what they want to be. We can't say, well, this is what I want you to be, and well, if you don't want to be this, then I don't want to see you ever again. And while that might be because we're just being afraid of being intimate with our own clients, and I mean this in a healing sense. So I think we need to really be able to demonstrate that we're in it together. And it's that in it together that sometimes, difficult as it might be, they'll heal on your behalf instead of heal on their behalf, but at least that's a start. So I think that's what we sometimes need to do. Any other questions?
Well, I think you just kind of answered the question, but it was, does intention play a part in Chinese aromatherapy, or how much does intention play a part?
Intention, in my opinion, plays a very important part. I mean, earlier I saw those charts on placebo, and I have this belief that placebo is that weak. I believe intention is very, very powerful. In fact, one of the things I often do with my students to kind of like defunct muscle testing is I would give one of my students, I don't let them see what it is, I give them sweet and low, and they hold the sweet and low, and then we do muscle testing, and their muscle obviously, for most people, they test very weak for sweet and low. And then we'll give them another object to hold, and it's honey. And then we test that, and then all of a sudden they test very strong for the honey. And the belief here, as a lot of chiropractors like to do, is the belief that the body knows what is good for it and what it's not, and that honey is good for the body and sweet and low, which has saccharin, is not good. But then what I do is I take the saccharin, and I just simply make a prayer over the saccharin. I say, may the saccharin provide the tool by which this person can grow and learn from. And you give it back to the person, and their muscle testing, they'll test strong again. So in other words, intention, well, can override the innate nature of things, right? If we were to assume that there is an innate nature. And I believe that's very, very important that we as a clinician, right, need to look at something that someone sees as negative, that we might inadvertently also see as negative, but that the fact that it's part of our lives, has become part of our lives, becomes an opportunity by which we can grow from. Then means the problem no longer becomes a problem, it becomes simply an opportunity. And that's what, you know, disease really is. But if we see it as a problem, and as a clinician I see, oh, cancer is something that is a problem, a patient sees it, then we're always fighting it. And we can maybe not necessarily learn from. Sometimes when we learn from something, that's when we can actually do something about it, rather than always fighting it. Okay? Someone else had, yes?
Would you please talk a little bit about the history of essential oils in traditional Chinese medicine? That is, where do the first references to essential oils come up in TCM? What do we know about the beginnings of distillation in China and in traditional Chinese medicine? And what oils do you find earliest in history? What oils have the longest history of use in China?
In terms of the actual use of essential oils, which is called yao, yao means oil, Li Shijian's book is usually the book that is attributed as being one of the first book to describe, right, basically enfourage, pressing like the peels of oranges or the peel of citrus peels and getting the oils of that. They also use a lot of the spicy oils, like clove is a very common oil that was used. Peppermint was definitely a very, very common oil. In fact, anyone who's been familiar with Chinese herbal medicine know that if you go to Chinatown, you could get white flower oil. A lot of these oils that, unfortunately, is somewhat adulterated, but definitely have been historically used for quite some time as topical external regimens within Chinese medicine. They never use essential oils internally, per se. So the earliest would date back to the Ming Dynasty, that is back to the 16th century where Li Shijian would have lived, and those would be some of the earliest oils that is mentioned historically in Chinese medicine. Okay? Excuse me? The name of the book is called My Ban Cao Gan Mu. Right? So BenCaoGang and then MU. Right? So the examination, right, of the basis of herbal medicine. It's written by Li Shijian. He lived in the 1500s. I don't have the exact date for you now, but Li Shijian lived at a time that he basically compiled a lot of information about different herbs. And after he died, his textbook was declared an imperial treasure. So as a result, all herbalists of China, right, would have to have studied the Materia Medica of Li Shijian. When the Europeans got interested in Chinese herbal medicine and began to study Chinese herbs and their properties, the book that they were referencing was Li Shijian's book. And it is this book that it mentions about 10 essential oils that's in there, about 10 oils that was basically extrapolated by enfourage. So they didn't have like distillation or something. It was just a very primitive process of squeezing oils out from peels, squeezing oils, and then adding that into carry oils. Right, in most cases, it was peanut oil, and then using those as liniments or as ointments per se over the different parts of the body. The idea of oils was that they were used to help expel wind. So it's, the idea of it was used to try to bring on a change. Wind was associated with change. Chinese medicine is always about helping someone to change. That's why they have a very powerful statement that wind is the cause of hundreds of diseases. The inability to change, because wind basically is an invitation to acclimate, to accommodate. The inability to acclimate and accommodate is the cause of hundreds of diseases. So aromatherapy, from a Chinese medical point of view, was to bring about change. And that's why I wanted to stress, it's not just the chemical composition. It's about using the aromas to affect the psyche to bring about a change. And that's what we want. That shift in consciousness could be all the difference in the world. Thank you. Thank you. I want to again thank you all, and until we meet again. Thank you. And thank you to Kirk.
Thank you, Jeffrey.